I'm Betty Lou, and this is In the Loop.
Have you felt that you've learned anything new about the crisis?
Are you confident that you're able to grow the top line?
Are we taking on too much?
Now, I've got to ask these questions because that is what people want to know.
In the Loop, weekdays, 8 a.m. on Bloomberg Television.
This is Taking Stock with Pim Fox on Bloomberg Radio.
Welcome. Let's find out exactly how to determine where you should be spending your money in restaurants in New York City. This is Taking Stock on Bloomberg. I'm Pim Fox, my co-host Dave Wilson, and we've got an expert when it comes to eating out. Ryan Sutton is with us. And Ryan, you came equipped with some literary material. You've got the new Zagat Guide. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
You're pronouncing that correctly. It's the Zagat Guide and the Michelin Guide.
Oh, I was going to do the Michelin Guide for you.
Michelin Guide. They're okay. the two red guides, and they came out on the same day. To be fair, Zagat, we want to be accurate, it's slightly more burgundy. But nonetheless, these are the two major restaurant guides that debut in New York every single year. And of course, the debate is which one to get, or should you get either of them, and how do they compare to, say, the local critics?
Well, I have the feeling that, you know, you being such an aficionado of dining out, you've got to have at least these two. These are the ones you carry everywhere that you go in the city. Can you just give us a little background about both of them and explain the differences, how they're compiled?
Of course. Well, Zagat, In its most briefest sense, Zagat is a survey, about 40,000 people, whereas Michelin is about anonymous inspectors who give the food rating. So the comparison I often like to give is that Zagat is like the Vox Populi. It's like the House of Representatives in the United States government. It's all about polls. It's all about getting reelected every 2 years, whereas Michelin is a little bit, you know, questions of accountability. They're the people behind the red curtain. They're anonymous inspectors, so they're more like the Supreme Court that issues these decrees once every year. And then, of course, we have, you know, the most important people, in my opinion, the local critics like, you know, me, the restaurant critic for Bloomberg News, Sam Sifton for The New York Times, Adam Platt, New York Magazine. And we're sort of like the rotating presidency, and our biggest weapon is the bully pulpit, like the American president. And we issue our decrees, we issue our reports every week, and then we get, you know, questions from the rest of the press. And so we're accountable in that sense. And the questions of accountability rise especially with the Michelin Guide because people, quite frankly, don't always know why they give a star or why they don't. They don't explain that in the guide. They just give a star and then describe the food. So that's the big criticism of the Michelin Guide.
I mean, in terms of Michelin, don't they go more for the high end? Because you noted, just sort of comparing the two, that, you know, out of four restaurants that were among the top newcomers, three of them in the Zagat Guide, less than $20 an entree.
That's exactly right. The newcomers, you know, in Zagat, like you're just saying, Mile End, a Jewish delicatessen, or a Montreal Jewish delicatessen in Brooklyn, Kaspikabel, a taqueria on the Upper East Side, and Luke's Lobster, which hawks lobster rolls for about $14, all top newcomers in the Zagat Guide. They really don't have newcomers in the Michelin Guide. Again, the Michelin Guide is more about not necessarily expensive things, but about the star system. And again, that brings us back to the Zagat. The chief thing about Zagat is that we have so many people, we have 40,000 people voting, so you have this diversity in terms of learning where people are eating and what people are eating, instead of just, you know, having a certain amount of inspectors, you know, telling you where to go or not to go.
All right, we're going to continue the conversation with Ryan Sutton. We're also going to bring in Jeff Selaznik. He's got a new enterprise called DinePrivate.com. Find out what it is next.
Dinner napkin?
Dinner napkin. Lay gently in the lap.
Good. Elbows off the table. Don't slouch. Shrimp fork, salad fork, dinner fork.
It's all about etiquette. You know, etiquette when it comes to dinner. And since we're talking dinner, you know, it's a good thing we have Ryan Sutton of Bloomberg News, a restaurant critic, with us. But he's also joined by Jeff Selaznik, who's the co-founder of DinePrivate.com, online booking service. So let's dig in, shall we, here on Taking Stock. I'm Dave Wilson, along with Pim Fox. So Jeff, let's start with you. I mean, we've heard about the Michelin Guide. We've heard about the Zagat Guide. So tell us about this site, DinePrivate.com. What's it all about?
Well, DinePrivate is it's a different than a review site. It is both a search engine, a guide, and a booking site for private dining rooms around New York. So it's an unbelievable tool for people who are planning private parties, anything, you know, with a large group. And instead of having to go through the back of one of these guidebooks and kind of call around and talk to different restaurants and wait for their call back, you can go online and search live and book through our site, which saves an immense amount of time and in many cases even saves you money.
Now, before I would actually book something, I've got to figure out exactly whether we should go or not, right? And that's why I turned to Ryan Sutton. I know you also are a bit of a restaurant critic. And Ryan, looking at the new Michelin guide and the new Zagat guide, what kinds of restaurants should we be looking to go to this year?
Well, this year is, of course, a very difficult year because the economy is still shaky. New restaurants are opening up. Of course, the biggest restaurants opening this fall are Lincoln, the new Jonathan Benno restaurant in Lincoln Center. We have Osteria Marini, the big Michael White restaurant, opening up in Soho.
You said big twice. Are these going to be like, you know, like 100-seat places?
Not only are they big restaurants, but they're, at least the Lincoln restaurant is going to be an expensive restaurant. You have $30 entrees between 30 and 40. I believe. You have tasting menus. You have, I believe it cost $20 million to build the restaurant. It's underneath the grass tarp in Lincoln Center.
And $20 million.
It cost $20 million. I can't confirm that myself. Of course, restaurants aren't public companies. They don't issue, you know, reports with the SEC. However, Jonathan Benno, the ex-chef of Per Se, was essentially the biggest free agent on the market in New York. And you know, he got swooped up by, I believe, the Valenti people, and they hired him. So it's interesting to see whether he's going to be able to produce a 3 Michelin-starred restaurant in Lincoln Center. Per Se, of course, is one of the 5 3-starred Michelin restaurants in New York, along with Danielle, Le Bernardin, Massa, and Jean-Georges.
And what about, you mentioned another one that we're supposed to pay attention to, an opening. Lincoln, you said Lincoln.
We're going to pay attention to Osteria Marini. It's one of Michael White's probably 8 restaurants to open this year. He's opening up another one at the Setai Hotel. I think it's in Midtown. Michael White, of course, is the man behind Maria, Alto, and Convivio. I think he has 5 Michelin stars right now. He's a favorite of Michelin Guide, favorite of the New York critics, and he's sort of the counterweight to what a lot of people are saying, the Batali-Bastianich regime that's been ruling New York Italian cuisine for the past 10 years or so. So he's providing an alternative to the Lupas and the Ottos and the Del Postos and the Babos, and he sort of has his own view of Italian cuisine that's equally regionable, sometimes slightly more rich, pastas with butter in them, and we're excited to see what he's going to do in the next, 5 years or so.
Since you mentioned Bastianich, I think in the interest of full disclosure, if nothing else, we should point out that Dine Private is founded not only by Jeff Zelaznik, who's with us, but also Joe Bastianich. How did this happen? How did this site come to be? Why did you figure that New York City needed something like this?
Well, it really came from the restaurant perspective. I mean, it really was originally a conversation that Joe and I were having. We were sitting at Del Posto one night and talking about why there wasn't a way for restaurants to sell their private dining inventory. And what a lot of people don't know about restaurants is that actually their private dining is one of their most profitable pieces. It has the best margins of almost anything in the dining business. And so it doesn't make sense, while there's people, you know, like my other site, Always Hungry, or Ryan, or anyone else, all we do is talk about a la carte dining. There was really nothing out there that allowed people to sell and promote their private dining spaces. And this didn't make sense. And Joe explained this to me. And I kind of went home and thought about it, and I started looking at it from the consumer side, which is this whole process is a real pain. Booking a private room, even if you know the people at the restaurant, takes time. You're faxing. I mean, I don't know when else I fax except when I'm booking a private dining room. I mean, and I kind of looked at it from the consumer side and said, you know what, this makes a lot of sense. So that's kind of how it all started. And, you know, a year later, we got a site.
You know, I went onto your website today. I liked it. I found it pretty easy to use, Jeff. And what's great about it, it's like OpenTable. You don't have to essentially call someone at the restaurant. Everything is done online. How many people are using it? Are you doing good business?
Yeah, we're very happy with the way things are going. You know, when we put it online last year at the very end of the year, our first goal was to build out the inventory. And I think if you go on there now, you'll see that there are close to 100 of the top restaurants in New York. And, so far, so good. I mean, people are using the site. We have an unbelievable retention rate with consumers once they come on and start using it. And I think for people that are really in the business of booking these things and have it as part of their daily jobs.
All right, we're going to continue the conversation about where to dine in New York. Now, we're talking about eating. With two experts here. We have Ryan Sutton from Bloomberg News. He's the restaurant critic. And also, we're talking about a new venture called DinePrivate.com with one of the co-founders, Jeff Selaznik. Ryan, so where do we eat right now? We talked about the introduction of the Michelin Guide and the Zagat Guide, their next iteration. Where do we go and eat now? What's new? What's interesting?
What's interesting right now...
That's open.
And that's open. And I'm also going to talk about this in the context of Michelin, because I think this is, you know, getting... I'm in the grand scale of things, a Michelin apologist, but I want to point out some of the flaws in that in terms of where we should eat now. One of my favorite new restaurants, you've probably been there, Jeff, is called Teresi Italian Specialties. It charges about $50 for six courses. Most people consider it to be one of the best new Italian restaurants in New York. Doesn't have a star by the Michelin Guide. Where is it located? It's located in Nolita. It's located north of Little Italy. It's run by two really cool guys. I believe they're alums of the of Cafe Bulu, and doing some really interesting stuff. Not necessarily with regional Italian food, but Italian American food. They're doing things like chicken parmesans at lunch. They're doing things like smothered pork chops at dinner and handmade mozzarella. Riffs on, you know, classic Italian American specialties, and it exposes, I think, one of the chief flaws of the Michelin Guide, because, as I said, you know, Michelin isn't a criticism guide. It's simply a guide, so it doesn't tell you what's wrong with the restaurant. It simply just doesn't have a star. You know, when it comes down to it, whether you're a guidebook or a Yelp reviewer or anyone else, we are critics. The job is not called complimenter. You know, there is something called Schiller, but I certainly don't think Michelin is a Schiller, because they do take away stars from chefs like they took away a star from Del Posto. And I guess my question for you, Jeff, you know, since you're partnered with Joe Bastianich, is how does he feel about having, you know, not getting a second star back for Del Posto?
Well, I mean, I can't really comment on exactly how he feels. I mean, I know that I'm sure they are disappointed, but I think that at the end of the day, listen, Del Posto just got four stars from the New York Times, and, you know, they're thrilled about that. Oh. So, but I do agree with you on a different note that Teresi is probably the most exciting new restaurant in New York, and there's really nothing like it, and it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, Jeff, I wanted to ask, you've got about a year's worth of data from the site, you know, Dine Private. From what you're seeing, I mean, do people really kind of focus on the restaurants that are rated the highest in the Michelin Guide or in the Zagat Guide when it comes to booking the private dining rooms?
Well, I think in general, you know, the juxtaposition of the Zagat and the Michelin Guide is interesting, because the Michelin Guide, in my mind, is actually more for the restaurant business. Chefs themselves are much more concerned about stars and about being listed in the Michelin Guide in New York. You know, outside of the country, it's very different. But the Zagat Guide, I believe, does make a huge impact on where people are going and where they're rated. And of course, having three stars in Michelin is going to make a big difference. But I think at the same point, you know, you look at someone like Teresi, who got a 27 for food in Zagat, which is fabulous, you know, and I think that that's really exciting.
You should just point out 27 out of 30. It's about as high as you can get.
It's about as high as you can get. But also, I'm glad you brought up 27 for Teresi Italian Specialties, because it also, you know, brings us to one of the criticisms of the Zagat Guide. It actually has an upside-down triangle next to the 27, and that means, according to Zagat, not enough people in the survey voted for Teresi to make it a reliable response. Now, and this also brings us to the issue of transparency and accountability. I talked to Tim Zagat, and I said, well, how many people voted? What's the cutoff for having a reliable response? And they don't give out that number. So, again, in every single guide and restaurant critic, there's an element of the man behind the curtain. We don't know completely what's going on behind the curtain, and, you know, there needs to be more transparency, not just in Michelin, but in Zagat and among us critics as well.
Well, I've just been using, I'm distracted because I'm using DinePrivate.com. I'm looking and seeing what's available this weekend. So where would you go, Jeff? What Ryan talked about the best new Italian restaurant. What do you like in the city right now?
Well, you know, he named one of my favorites, but I think, you know, what I'm focused on right now is all the exciting new places opening, and he touched on some of them. Marini, which is Michael White's new place, which I was actually at two nights ago, which was fabulous, I thought.
How about something that isn't going to break the bank?
Okay. I mean, I think that the most interesting thing probably out there that's not going to break the bank is maybe some of the things, actually, you know, not to plug my own.
Go plug. Go ahead.
You know, I actually think probably one of the most interesting dining experiences now is at Eataly, which is, you know, not to plug my partner here, but it's actually where I've been spending the most time because I think you can have such an unbelievable variety of eating experiences there. And for people who are into food, there's really nothing like it. I mean, it's over, it's like, you know.
Has it calmed down? Because, Ryan, you know, you were talking about Eataly last time you were here, and you said that it was pretty busy. Wilson's waving. Did you go, Dave Wilson?
I went last weekend, and in fact, we ran into Lydia Bastianich in the shopping area, just, you know, walking through, checking things out. I mean, it's hopping on a Friday night.
Yeah, it's pretty wild there. I mean, you walk in, you see people, you know, hanging out, eating, drinking. The greatest thing about it is, you know, you can walk around, you can drink wine, you can food shop, you can do things like you can't do anywhere else. So.
Well, you know, Dave brings up a good point, which is it important to have the owner of a restaurant or an establishment there? I mean, does it make a difference in your view?
It doesn't make a huge difference, in my opinion. I mean, listen, people have this really romantic view of chefs and restaurateurs as having these like little tiny shops they run in Soho, but they're really leaders of now multinational empires. And, you know, the leader of, say, Cisco isn't going to be down there making routers every day. And just by the same token, I don't expect, you know, Mara Batali to be cleaning off the plates before they get sent to the kitchen. So, no, it's not important for them to be there, but it's important for their type of cuisine to be represented well. And I think a lot of New York chefs are doing that well. You know, Mara Batali and Michael White are two of the best.
We got to leave it there. Gentlemen, thank you very much for giving us this insight. Ryan, Jeff, thank you very much for helping us dine out. This is Taking Stock on Bloomberg. There is an extra hour of Taking Stock, weekdays from 5 p.m. until 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Watch us live around the world on Bloomberg Television and listen to us at Bloomberg Radio on XM and Sirius Satellite Radio across North America.
Copyright Bloomberg LP 2010.